This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for business on BFM 89.9.
We've spent a lot of time at home over the last few months, and I don't know about you, but one thing that I tend to do when I have some extra time on my hands is to get rid of old things. It's like a mini spring cleaning process, and I found that I had a lot of old gadgets and electronics lying around the house that I wanted to dispose of. Stuff like old handphones from decades ago, outdated tablets, obsolete phone chargers, laptops, and even old CPUs, right? The problem was, I didn't really know how to get rid of these things. And chucking them in the bin or leaving them outside wasn't an option, obviously. And I'm going to guess that a lot of you have this same issue as well. You know, where and how do you properly and ethically, keyword ethically, get rid of your old electronics? To expand on this, I got in touch with Mohammad Tareh El Fattatri. His friends just call him Mo, by the way. And he's the founder of Earth, that's E-R-T-H. They're an e-waste service provider and management facility that picks up your old electronics for free, which is then sent for recycling. Mo, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I listen to BFM all the time.
Yeah, you know, Mo, what I really want to know is, how do you even begin to develop an idea like this? Because e-waste recycling isn't an easy job. Like, you need a lot of resources, equipment, space, people, all kinds of permits, and not to mention lots of funding. So it's not an easy venture to kickstart. So how did it happen for you, and what is that process like?
This goes way back to when I used to live in Finland. Actually, I lived in Finland most of my life, and my co-founder and I, we began to look at one of the world's major issues, which is waste management. We realized that this is something that a lot of countries are struggling with, and especially after there was new legislation in China, which restricted the imports of foreign waste. So a lot of the countries were actually struggling to cope with the waste. So we basically came to Malaysia in summer of 2018 on a scouting trip. We wanted to see, what can we do here to help solve this problem with a specific focus on e-waste. And of course, you can't come here looking for something like that without going to, the mother of all, electronics hub for everything that we use every day, which is Lohiat Plaza. I saw this phone shop dealer lugging out a glass box that had like hundreds of old, dusty, some half broken Nokia mobile phones out of his shop into the corridor. And this was close to closing time. And I was asking him, hey, why are you doing this? Where are these all going? So he was like, yeah, I'm just about to take it to the dump downstairs. And I was like, but this is e-waste. You can't really do that. So he said, yeah, well, we don't have a proper system for disposal. So here we just throw it in the trash. But I went home that day and I looked whether there are already e-waste recycling factories in Malaysia. And I did find one in Klang. So I went the next day to the same phone dealer and I had actually agreed with him that he would keep it for me because I was interested to actually take that stuff instead of him dumping it. And I offered him $1,000 for the whole batch. And he just kept, bringing out boxes, more and more boxes of old phones that he wanted to get rid of, such that in the end, it was about 4,000 devices. $1,000, about 4,000 ringgit and 4,000 devices. So it's about a ringgit a piece. And then I put all the stuff into a Grab and I took the Grab to the recycling factory. And I was basically able to give them for recycling. And then I made about 6,000 ringgit. And that was like within 24 hours. So it's not a matter of that the recycling factories don't exist. They do exist. But it's just a matter of them not knowing where is the e-waste for them to collect it. And then also the consumers, when they want to get rid of it, they just want something easy, quick. They don't have time to do the research and call all the factories. So we just decided to create a layer in between those two and just connect them. We take the e-waste immediately from the consumers. We store it until it is a big enough amount. And then the recycling factories are happy to come and take it from us.
So when you say dispose or recycle, right, what exactly does that mean? Because I think to a lot of people, it just means refurbishing or, you know, fixing it up and selling it again secondhand. But that's not what you do. I mean, one, it's a lot more than that, but also that's not what you do, right?
Actually, about 75% of discarded devices are not in a condition that they are reusable. And even if they were to be repaired and offered on the market, probably no one would buy them because consumer tastes are changing quite fast. And already these electronics are built in a way that makes them obsolete after only a few years. So 25% can still be refurbished and they would have a place and some value on the secondary market. But I'm talking now about the 75% that nobody wants to buy or they are unrepairable. So in that case, they go to the recycling factory, they get segregated, sorted, and dismantled into the smallest possible units. So basically, a phone has basically a piece of glass. So all the pieces of glass are put together. Then you have the back cover, which is aluminum. All the aluminum is put together. And then the internal boards are all put together. And then all of these different components in large quantities go down downstream for further processing until the final product is basically ingots of silver, gold, aluminum, and so on, which can then be sold to factories to manufacture new products.
Do you have plans to open your own recycling facility? You know, become like a self-sustaining recycling plant with your own ecosystem and supply chain?
Actually, if you look at the situation here in Malaysia, was one of the first countries in Southeast Asia to have legislation related to e-waste. I'm talking now about the late 80s. And then in 2005, there was a new set of guidelines. So that basically sparked a wave of large-scale factories. So people have already invested millions in building factories all around the country that can handle e-waste. And if you go to them and you tell them, you know, are you running 24/7? Are you running all like three shifts? They would say, no, we are only running one shift. So we can obviously run two or even more shifts. So why is that the case? It's because they don't have a steady supply. So all of these people have already made investments, but they are not operating at full capacity. So I don't see any reason for us to go and set up our own factory unless all of the existing factories are already operating at full capacity, which I don't think we are going to reach anytime soon. So I do know that there is new investments coming in and the existing factories, let's say, can handle something like 50 to 100,000 tons of e-waste. And what is actually being recycled right now is a lot less than that. So I think for a few years, we would not necessarily have to go into building our own factories, but rather work with the partners that already have those factories. And they're, of course, licensed by the Jabatan Alam Sekitar, the Department of Environment, and it takes years to get this certification and to run with the SOPs that make it environmentally friendly. So we have no reason to try to tread on their territory. We'd rather work with them such that we can make the entire ecosystem more efficient as it is instead of trying to reinvent the wheel.
Is Earth a social enterprise? Can it be considered a social enterprise?
Earth is 100% considered a social enterprise because if you actually look at the amount of, let's say, gold, silver, the material value inside the electronic waste. Now, we, of course, know how much value is in the average phone, in the average laptop, and so on. So we design our cash rewards that we pay to the consumers and businesses depending on the amount of valuable materials that are in those devices. So we actually pay at least 50% of the value that are in your devices back to you. So, of course, there is two different ways of getting the e-waste. One is the drop-off. So if you drop off the e-waste to us, then let's say that the laptop has 50 ringgit of value, then in that case you get half, which is 25. But let's say you want a pickup, a convenient pickup from your address. In that case, we still pay 50%, but you basically split that 50% between yourself and the hero who actually came to do all the work and carry it around and then deliver it to our warehouse. In that case, you get about 12.5 and the hero gets 12.5. So this system we have tweaked, and now after thousands of transactions, I'm glad to say that all the players in the transaction are satisfied, and we have really managed to speed up the rate of collection from just simply putting the collection boxes everywhere by at least a factor of 10.
Right. I'm speaking to Mo. He's the founder of Earth, about proper e-waste management and why people should get into the habit of recycling their old electronics via management points like Earth as both an ethical and eco-friendly measure. We will be back after these messages. BFM 89.9.
Brand-friendly marketeers. BFM 89.9.
And we're back on Open for Business. I'm Arvind Yuvraj, and I'm joined by Mohammad El Fatatri, the founder of Earth, which is an e-waste solutions provider and provides free pickups for your old electronics. So the way Earth works is that we set an appointment. You send someone on your team to pick it up. The stuff is calculated and you pay the customer, sometimes even on the spot. And the interesting bit is that you pay the person for getting rid of their stuff. Why decide to do that though? Because now it's like you're buying their stuff instead of them paying you for your service.
No, actually, so this goes back to our definition as a social enterprise. Since we are paying at least 50% of the revenue coming into the company back to our beneficiaries, in this case, of course, our heroes, the people who do the collection work, but also the people who actually own the stuff. This basically provides an incentive such that even the people who don't necessarily have a priority to save the environment would still be motivated to recycle. So more than 80% of the people who recycle with us have actually told us that either they have not ever recycled before, or they do not regularly recycle their electronics. So providing an incentive, it just makes it more attractive for people to do the right thing. And if you look actually on the other end of the spectrum at the consumption side, how many offers and how many coupons and super deals and all of that stuff are basically trying to motivate us to consume. So in my opinion, this asymmetry is exactly the problem. This is why our landfills are overflowing. We really need to close this gap between the rate of consumption and the rate of recycling / reproduction. So that's why as consumption is rewarded, then recycling should also be rewarded. And that's why we choose to do it. However, I must say that as we launch in other countries, like this model works perfectly in Southeast Asia, because you have those secondary services, like, for example, our freelance heroes who can still earn a living and just by receiving, like splitting the 50% reward between them and the owner of the e-waste, they still can make a living. And they are satisfied to continue doing this job. However, if you go to a place like Europe, where the wages needed in order to make a living are much, much higher, in that case, we might have to tweak our system once more and then give the consumers a choice to either receive the cash reward upon them delivering to our drop-off points, or then they would still get the convenience of a home pickup, but they would not receive the cash reward that we pay here in Southeast Asia. So in my opinion, that would still be valuable. And why don't I believe that they should pay us to get rid of stuff? Well, the simple answer is because there is a lot of intrinsic value in the waste that they give us. So if you look at, for example, e-waste versus plastic waste. So e-waste easily has per average kg about 10 times the value of an average kg of recyclable plastic. So since I am repossessing valuable materials, valuable resources from them that has value and that will generate income for us, then we believe that the right thing is actually to compensate them for it.
Which leads me to my next question, which is, how does Earth make money? And you touched on this before in the beginning. You said that you sell the old goods or the electronics to the factories or the processing plants when you have enough of a bulk. Is that your only stream of revenue?
Yes. So as I broke it down to you, we basically pay half of the value inside the device to the hero and the owner of the e-waste. And then with the other 50% gross margin, we are able to cover our fixed cost. And then we have our net profit. Now, when you go to B2B transactions, which are basically, I mean, some of our customers make orders for disposal of 10 tons, 15 tons. In that case, the logistics cost for us is actually quite low. And because of that, the margins from B2B are much, much better. So we are still profitable on the B2C side, but of course the margins on the B2B side are much better. And I think that both the B2B and the B2C go hand in hand, but this is basically a service that we must provide. This is not a luxury. The landfills are really overflowing. The planet is not in good shape. We cannot afford to just do nothing about this problem. The United Nations expects that if we just continue at the same rate, the amount of e-waste in the world is basically going to more than double by 2050. So the announcement that I want to share with you today is that we are actually embarking on an extended partnership with DHL Express Malaysia. We will basically be working with DHL and DHL's customers to promote the culture of e-waste recycling. But basically, the point here is how can we help Malaysia divert as much e-waste as possible away from landfills and into the proper recycling and reproduction channels.
Yeah, and 2050 isn't far away. I mean, but I guess because of, you know, these landfills aren't located near people, it's always a case of, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
You are absolutely right. You know, we've probably, many of us have seen the viral video of this river in Indonesia that is overflowing with plastic bottles. And, you know, it's a very unpleasant sight. But of course, plastic is a serious problem, but it is also a very visible problem because, let's say, the amount of plastic that is, you know, in front of us that we see every day is quite large. If you compare it to, for example, the amount of e-waste that we generate. So here in Malaysia, according to Jabatan Alam Sekitar, the Department of Environment, is about 10 kg per person per year. So 10 kg, you might say, oh, that doesn't sound like much. But in reality, 70% of the toxic heavy metal contamination that happens when e-waste and other household waste are put in the landfill is actually coming from e-waste. So 70% of the toxic heavy metals are not coming from the plastic bottles. They are coming from the e-waste. So it's almost like a silent killer. It's kind of a small in quantity, but the toxicity is very, very high. And there is really no good reason why we should put valuable materials, valuable resources like gold, silver, and so many other good stuff into the landfills. Just to give you a small statistic that really surprises me whenever I talk about it, the entire gold mining industry in Malaysia, by the way, the value that it generates every year, there is three times as much gold dumped into landfills every single year, as much as the entire gold mining industry. So if we were to recycle all of the e-waste of Malaysia every year, we would basically grow the country's gold production by four times.
You've decided to offer a few ways of disposal, drop-off points, that's one, and you also have people who go door-to-door and pick up the stuff. How do you source for the collectors? Are they like volunteers or full-time staff, part-time staff?
So our heroes, there is actually different tiers of heroes. Of course, we have a number of heroes that are directly affiliated with Earth. So they are the ones who have been with us since the very beginning. And they are basically the ones who ensure that our acceptance rate for orders coming through our system is almost 99%. So that basically means that we are not like other players in the market. Other players in the market, maybe 50% of the orders are not worth it. They are too far, too big, too small. Something is not right. So they just basically simply ignore them. Whereas our acceptance rate is almost 99%. And that is not because of, for example, the fact that that we can easily find third party, for example, logistics providers that can fulfill all our needs. That is not the case. So we have our own heroes who do the orders that is hard for us to find a third party logistics provider that can do it. Or that can do it at a reasonable price. So these are kind of our first responders, let's say, when we have a volume of orders. However, there are also some orders which are quite simple to handle. Let's say someone wants to discard a laptop and a tablet, a few mobile phones, maybe a projector and a printer, something small like that. In which case, we go into the second layer of our heroes, which are our partnerships with other logistics providers who have a pool of thousands of heroes available or drivers. And we basically, our algorithm determines whether this order should be sent to the third-party logistics partners, or they should be sent to our heroes, and accordingly, the collection is done. And then we have the third level, which is basically partners like DHL and other companies, which help us on the collection of either pre-scheduled, like let's say, for example, our collection boxes, which are spread all around Klang Valley. So these basically are running on a scheduled route, and we just go and collect them on a regular basis, or in cases where we have like B2B orders, which are like 10 tons or 15 tons, something like that, in which case we also rely on basically large-scale logistics companies, which help us to remove the e-waste from the customer's premises and then take it directly to the processing plant without going through our warehouses first. So these are the three layers with which we are able to handle 99% of the orders that we receive.
Right. We're going to take another quick break. But, you know, if you have old electronics lying around, you can always dispose of them through Earth's recycling facility. It's a quick 60-second application on earth.app. That's E-R-T-H, by the way. We will be back in a bit. BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Open for Business on BFM 89.9. I am Arvind Yuvaraj, and I'm joined today via Zoom by Mo. He's the founder of Earth. It's an e-waste recycling company. And we're talking about the service they provide, as well as the importance of actually disposing of your old electronics the right way. So one thing I noticed on your price chart is how you split the computers into with hard drive and without hard drive.
Correct.
Yeah, and that's good, because most people don't want to give their computers to recycling because of fear of data theft. And it's a legit concern. But normally when it comes to e-waste recycling, there's a confidentiality guarantee or even a data wiping step or process beforehand, right?
Yes. So actually, here again, there are different types of data destruction. The first type of data destruction, which is actually the simplest one, when the hard drives reach the processing factory, actually they are almost destroyed by kind of a giant shredding machine. So they are basically almost obliterated. First of all, you know, like the outer shell becomes very deformed, and then eventually the internal disk as well is broken into smaller pieces, which makes it impossible for data to be retrieved from it. However, there are different options if a company or an individual is still concerned that they don't want to hand their hard drive to someone else. So, of course, they can remove the hard drive from the device, in which case they can, for example, drill the hard drive themselves. If they want. If they don't want, we also have a type of service that we can issue a certificate, which costs about 50 ringgit per device. And we basically bring a machine to your premises, and we basically completely wipe the data in front of you. And then you can basically check on the machine that everything has been wiped. And then after that, we give you a physical certificate with the serial number of the hard drive and so on. So you have different options. You can either do a little bit of work and remove the hard drive yourself or destroy it yourself. You can give it to us and we will destroy it anyway. Or you can basically, for extra security, you can pay for the certificate and we will basically bring the machine and delete the data in front of you.
I want to touch on the MCO for a bit because, you know, the MCO is everything nowadays. Obviously, the MCO must have affected you in some way, same as it did for everyone. But in your case, you send people to customers' houses to collect things. So there's plenty of movement and, you know, meeting people happening, right? So was that an issue? Like, did you see a dip in appointments because people just didn't want to interact with strangers for a few months?
Actually, of course, during the MCO, we put out an announcement that we are unable to actually do the collections. But that didn't mean that we stopped accepting the orders, because we were basically creating a backlog such that whenever it is announced that we can resume our operations, we would immediately go and clear out that backlog. And what actually happened was that we built a pipeline of orders during the 6 weeks of MCO that was the equivalent of our entire 2019 e-waste volume. So that was actually very surprising for us. We didn't expect that on May 4th, when we came back to work, to have so much orders ahead of us. So we're talking here about something like 400% more orders than we normally handle. So things were piled up during the MCO, but once we came back on May 4th, we were able to clear out this backlog within about a month. And now we have restored kind of our normal rhythm of collections, because all the previous orders have been dealt with. And of course, the volume is also growing organically. So we are very happy about that.
Mo, what kinds of challenges are you facing at the moment with Earth?
As I mentioned earlier, we like to maximize as much as possible the cash reward that we pay to the recyclers. We also like to pay our collection heroes very, very well, which doesn't leave much room for us to go out there and spend big budgets on, you know, getting the message out there, building the awareness. That's why we partner with, you know, DHL Express Malaysia and all of those, you know, kind of older, much bigger companies that can help us amplify our message, but without having to spend big budgets. So this is maybe the biggest challenge is the user acquisition cost, because if we were to eliminate or reduce the cash reward, we would 100% have the budget to go out there and be very, very aggressive with the advertising, like, for example, food delivery services and other services. But we prefer to hand this value back to the consumers so that the consumers would understand that whatever they are discarding or they used to discard before used to have value. And that hopefully would alter their behavior moving forward. So I'm glad to say that Malaysia has been a great place where we have had support from large players like, of course, DHL Express. And then on a regional level, like you know, another partner that has helped us quite a lot was also on a Southeast Asia and Asian level was Alipay. I mean, Alipay basically created 1 year ago a mini documentary online about us that was seen in China more than 1 million times. And that documentary basically helped spread the word significantly about our operations. And I'm glad to say we have experienced since that documentary was made 1,000% growth. So this is what I love about Southeast Asia. The big players, once they see a great idea, they basically help you amplify the message. And I do think we will be seeing also amazing results with this upcoming campaign with DHL.
Yeah, and that comes with marketing the company, right? I mean, the more people know about you, the better idea they'll have of, you know, disposing of e-waste ethically.
Correct. So just building awareness is the thing which we want to do. Because, I can tell you, and I've been researching this quite well for the last 2 years. We are also received a grant from MITE in order to dig deeper into what are the bottlenecks and inefficiencies in the Malaysian e-waste sector, such that we could double the nation's recycling rate by 2025. And why so soon? Well, so soon because simply the existing capacity of the recycling plants can handle at least double whatever is being recycled now. So today, Malaysia stands at 25% recycling rate. It's number three in Southeast Asia. Actually, number one is South Korea, 45%. Number two is Singapore, 35%. But Malaysia's recycling factory and licensed recycling factory capacity could easily handle double what is being handled right now. So if we just simply double the recycling rate, Malaysia will be number one e-waste recycler in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, let's hope we get there. You know, let's hope we get there soon. But, you know, Mo, I think, you know, a good place to end would be to talk about expansion plans or expansion potential for a sector like this. So do you have plans to set up hubs in, you know, different cities? Or what are those expansion plans like?
So we're currently working on a very exciting franchise-like scheme whereby Earth would still maintain the online brand as well as the operational playbook of how to do this whole thing and how to monetize e-waste and how to sort it and how to collect it efficiently and so on. And then basically handing this playbook straight to local entrepreneurs in other countries so that they could basically still under the Earth brand, they could also launch collection activities in other countries. And I'm happy to say that we've already received requests from Australia, the Netherlands, parts of the Middle East. So we really have a plan because this is a problem that is, you know, exists all around the world. So we are growing very nicely, and you know, this is something that keeps us busy. But there is no reason why all the lessons that we've learned over the last 2 years should not be replicated instantly in other countries if there are local entrepreneurs who wish to, you know, kind of carry the flag and start doing the collections using the Earth methodology and the platform that we have built so far in other countries. So this is our next step, is basically just trying to launch this in as many countries as possible.
Mo, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you very much. It's really a great honor and a pleasure. And yeah, thanks and keep up the good work. I'm really enjoying BFM. Occasionally, when our drivers, already are overworked and they're handling as many orders as possible and we still have orders coming into the system, I actually go personally myself to do a few collections here and there. And during those times, I have no better companion than BFM 89.9.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in, Mo. That was Mohammad Tare Al-Fatatri. He is the founder of Earth. It's an e-waste recycling company that provides free pickups and is looking to expand in a number of ways in the near future. Again, check them out at Earth. That's ERTH.app if you need your old gadgets and laptops and even big appliances recycled in an ethical and environmentally friendly way. This interview is also available via podcast on the BFM website, which is bfm.my. It is also available on the BFM app, which you can get for free on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. Alternatively, you know, Spotify, we are parked under the podcast section. This has been Arvind Yuvaraj on Open for Business, BFM 89.9.
You've been listening to Open for Business on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.